Thank you for that introduction, and thanks to all of you for the invitation to speak. It's a real honor, and I think before I give you a charge, I'd like to salute you, and I think you all ought to give yourselves a huge round of applause for all of your accomplishments during these 3 years. So. I thought hearing applause early would make me less nervous, too. I have to confess, when I was asked to give this talk, I think it was about this time yesterday, not that I'm complaining, I grew nervous immediately. I've only given one graduation-related talk, and it didn't go so well. It was a speech at my high school graduation. And I decided to be novel and talk about a subject that never comes up at graduation, and the subject was time. Mostly, as far as I can recall, the speech was a series of famous and not so famous quotations about time that I'd taken from Bartlett's book of quotations and strung together. Sir Walter Raleigh on time, Churchill on time, Helen Keller on time, Vince Lombardi on time, random Greek playwright on time. Oddly, I can still remember some of the lines, like, time is a river and swift is its current. No sooner is a thing brought to the surface than it is swept away and replaced with something else. After a quotation like this, I'd pause for dramatic effect and go on to the next quote, which I'd introduce with equally dramatic effect. Time, I'd say, time, as the sages remind us, time doth fly whilst one is engaged in amusing pastimes. Shortened today to time flies when you're having fun. These quotes were interspersed with references to books we read in English class, which had something to do with time. My friend to this day swears that I emphasized that it was an honors English class, which now makes me cringe. It also makes me cringe a bit to think that at the time I gave this speech, I was about 5'4", and puberty was a good year or two away. So now imagine one banal quote about time after another, delivered in a soprano voice. When I look back on it, all I can think and hear is, time, time, time. So this was bad enough, but it actually gets a little worse. My freshman year in college, I tried out for the debate team. I first tried out for the crew team, only to be made a coxswain, given my height or lack thereof. And then I put on weight over Thanksgiving and Christmas, and came back too heavy to be a coxswain and still too short to row. So I decided to try out for the debate team, which didn't have any height restrictions. So, not surprisingly, to try out, you had to give a 5-minute speech. Well, I took out the old graduation speech, polished it up a bit, shortened it here and there, added a few more time is money sort of quotes, and had at it. There was dead silence when I was done, and then one of the guys on the team started clapping and said, that was one of the best satires of a graduation speech he had ever heard. I smiled weakly and don't really remember much after that, except that at some point I'm pretty sure my roommate, who had come along to watch the spectacle, fell out of his chair. He was laughing so hard. Unfortunately, there was no place for a satirist on the debate team that year or the next. And quite clearly, I'm still working through this experience, which is why today I want to talk to you about time. And happiness. Time and happiness are my subjects, and my charge to you in a nutshell is to use your time in a way that makes you happy. Novelty will clearly have to await my next speech should the occasion arise. So let me start with what's happened while you've been in law school. A lot's happened in the short time you've been here. When you started, for example, John Roberts was Judge Roberts, not Chief Justice Roberts. Sam Alito was still a member of that shady alumni group from Princeton. No. I'm kidding. He was Judge Alito, not Justice Alito. Dean Jeffries was, well, Dean Jeffries, just like he was in college. Pluto was still a planet when you started, and it's not anymore. But it has 2 more moons than when you began, whereas the school year has 2 fewer weeks. Katrina was just a female name. Dick Cheney had not yet shot anyone. Donald Rumsfeld still had a job. John Kerry thought he might be president someday. Britney Spears, I think, didn't have a baby, but did have a full head of hair. Angelina hadn't yet adopted any children. High school had not yet been set to song. The circus had not yet set up shop in the parking lot. The dandelion parade was still held on campus when the circus wasn't in town. There was no such thing as January term or the John Paul Jones Arena. Martha Ballinger had not yet arrived on campus to care for us all. Martha. The Law Review had yet to launch its online magazine, which I understand tripled its readership to 11. I'm kidding. It's 12. Mike Stark hadn't yet been tackled in public by one of George Allen's staffers. The law school was safely in the top 10. I'm just giving the facts here. The Rolling Stones had never played in Charlottesville. There was no Law and Business Journal. The Red Sox had yet to win the World Series. Beer was still allowed at the libel shop. Ken Jennings had yet to win 75 consecutive games of Jeopardy. Babies were still welcome on the law school grounds. Stephen Smith had never lost an arm wrestling match. Martha Stewart hadn't yet gone to jail, nor had Jack Abramoff. Warren Buffett was $30 billion richer, not yet having decided to give his money to the one person in the world richer than he is. You had yet to attend a Feb Club party, Foxfield, a Pila auction, barrister's ball, or win a softball championship. I still had no idea what beer pong was. And Terry Schiavo was still alive, as were the students and faculty so mercilessly slain on the Virginia Tech campus. Now, as you are about to leave the bosom, or is it womb, I can never remember, of the law school, I bet many of you are worried about time and you've been wondering, gee, Professor Ryan, what should I do? Well, this is your lucky day because time is what I'm here to talk to you about. You'll discover if you work for a law firm that time is not always your friend. You will learn to think about time in tiny little slivers, like 5 or 6 or 10 minute increments. More importantly, you'll learn how to creatively reconstruct your time when filling out timesheets, or if you work in the public interest when making a motion for attorney's fees. If you're making a lot of money, you may be tempted to divide your time into slightly larger increments in order to calculate how much you made in that particular increment. As I confess I did when working for a law firm after my first summer, I made multiples more than I ever had made before, and I couldn't stop thinking about it. Shallow, I know, but the work wasn't exactly compelling. So I think one trip to the coffee machine just made $50. One trip to the men's room, anywhere from 20 to 60. Those of you who are heading off to do public service might also be tempted to calculate your wages, as I have also done, and you might discover that you earned more per hour when you worked in retail, or as a landscaper, or waiting tables. If you do this and begin to lament, know this, and I mean this in all seriousness, that I and others in this room regard you as a hero, honestly. Doing good and helpful work for little pay is indeed heroic, and your classmates and I are impressed, indeed awed, by your dedication. You'll all discover that you have less time than you have now. There will be less time for parties, less time for midday chats, less time for Thursday afternoon kegs, less time for softball, less time for thinking aimlessly, less time for frisbee, croquet, bocce, tennis, or golf, less time for showering. And time's velocity will increase. Each year will go faster than the one before, and the next faster than the one before that, and then you'll die. All right. Any questions? Okay, this is not meant to depress you. But to get you thinking now that you need to master time or it will master you, to get you thinking seriously, what should I do with my time? What do I want to be? Who do I want to be? How do I want to be? So here are my pearls of wisdom about how to use time to your advantage, or more precisely, how to use time to make yourself happy. That's right. Make yourself happy. You're going to hear a lot over graduation about lofty goals, changing the world, cleaning up the legal profession, and all of these things are important. But for my money, the most important thing you need to focus on is how to make yourself happy in the short time in each day that you have, in the short years that you have. This is not about being selfish, as you'll see. Happiness and self-indulgence overlap, but they are not one and the same, as we'll get to. So here's what you need to do. You need to make time. You need to take time. You need to seal time. You must not waste time. And lastly, you need to cherish your time. First, you need to make time. Just to get this out of the way, you need to make time for showering and personal hygiene. That is important. You also need to make time for your friends and family. Call your parents, call your brothers, call your sisters, email them, send them pictures, visit them. If you have children, make time for them. You can't be a good parent in the same daily increments that you use to fill out timesheets. And time at home when your children are sleeping doesn't count. Make enough time that your children seem bored by you. They never will be, but that ought to be your goal. Make time to keep up with your friends. Don't miss weddings. Don't miss funerals. Both matter. And don't put any of this off. Don't tell yourself you'll do it tomorrow. Don't tell yourself you're too busy. This coming weekend, I'm going to New York to see my roommates from law school. One's coming from Maine, two from California, one from Washington, D.C. To put this in cost-benefit terms with which you are now all familiar, the cost I'll pay is in time, time away from work, time away from my family. But the benefit I'll receive is a huge dose of joy, which I'll carry with me until I see them again. And while we're on this tangent of family and friends, let me say this. You can carry your friends and family with you wherever you go, and you should. If you're nervous about meeting a client or meeting with your boss, nervous about a case, imagine yourself telling a friend about it. Imagine your friend in the meeting with you, someone who would appreciate the humor in the situation. Don't actually talk to your imaginary friend during the meeting, but you know that. And if you're beating yourself up, you might think about Crossing Brooklyn Ferry by Walt Whitman, in which Whitman, as the poet, speaks to later generations who are, as the title suggests, on the Brooklyn Ferry. I think of this poem often, but instead of thinking about Whitman, I think of my friend speaking to me. Here's part of it. It avails not, neither time or place, distance avails not. I am with you, you men and women of a generation, or ever so many generations hence. I project myself. Also I return, I am with you, and know how it is. It is not upon you alone the dark patches fall. The dark threw patches upon me also. The best I had done seemed to me blank and suspicious. My great thoughts, as I supposed them, were they not in reality meager? Would not people laugh at me? Or if Whitman isn't your cup of tea, you might think of these lines from Patty Griffin, a contemporary singer-songwriter. Instead of thinking about your friends speaking to you, you might think about making and keeping this promise to your friends. You're out there walking down the highway, and all the signs have blown away. Sometimes you wonder if you're walking in the wrong direction. But if you break down, I'll drive out and find you. If you forget my love, I'll try to remind you and stay by you when it don't come easy. And time is a river. No, I'm just kidding. In addition to making time, you should take time. Take time to learn something new. Take time to develop a hobby or two or three. In fact, take time to become passionate about something completely unrelated to your work. Take time to exercise. Take time to travel someplace you've never been. And perhaps most importantly, take time to be kind. Some of you are going to work in public service and may think that your commitment to public interest satisfies your obligation to be kind. Others are going to work for firms in large cities, and you might think that you'll think about kindness once your loans are paid off. Both reactions are wrong. You need to take time to be kind on a daily basis. That means paying attention to those around you who are in need. And I don't mean you need to take the homeless guy in the corner back to your apartment and straighten out his life, although you might do that. I mean noticing who's having a hard time, remembering someone's birthday, taking time to buy a gift or send a card or an email to celebrate someone else's success or a milestone. Take time to ask not just how are you doing, but are you okay? I've been reading a lot lately about what makes people happy. There are a lot of studies about what makes people happy. And one of the consistent findings is that people are happy when they do something kind for others. So you might think that it's actually in your self-interest to be kind. You can make yourself happy by helping others. Now, some of the tougher guys in the audience might think this sounds a little too feminine for their taste, sending cards, birthday presents, and the like, but kindness is not gendered. And I've seen a bumper sticker around town that says, "Strong men don't bully." And I've often thought that sets the bar a little too low. I wonder whether we should expect more from strong men and strong women. Is their obligation really over once they put aside bullying? In my view, we ought to expect kindness and you ought to practice it, but it takes time. You're going to feel too rushed to lend a hand to someone who cannot in turn help you. But if you take your time to extend that hand, you will create a moment that neither you nor the person you help ever forgets. I have this odd obsession with reading memorials in law reviews when some faculty member dies. And the thing I find most consistently in these memorials is that regardless of what a star the person was as a scholar or a great teacher, and even if the person was, as you read between the lines and gather, not so nice, everyone who writes a tribute finds an instance of kindness to highlight. And I think the reason is because ultimately we all recognize the importance of it. All right, every now and then you need to steal time. Play hooky. Check out whether it's for an afternoon or a day or a weekend. Drop your responsibilities. Be spontaneous. Do something unexpected. When you're hemming and hawing about whether to do this, ask yourself, what will I remember more? Doing what I planned or doing something out of the ordinary? Now, don't take this too far and ask yourself this every day. You might end up riding your bicycle naked through Central Park instead of taking a deposition simply because the former would likely be more memorable. Not that I've done this. I've taken depositions naked, but never really much. No, I'm just kidding. In the right context, though, this is exactly the right question to ask. About 9 years ago, my father, who was retired at the time, called my wife Katie and I early in the morning. We were living in New York, and he and my mom were living in New Jersey. He called and said, "Let's go to the shore." Now, for those of you not from New Jersey who don't know this, the shore refers to the only true beach in the world, the Jersey Shore. Come on. My wife and I hesitated because we both had things we needed to do at work, but neither of us had anything we absolutely had to do, so we went to the shore and spent the day at the beach with my parents. My dad died suddenly and unexpectedly about 8 months later, and I wouldn't trade anything for the day that I had with him at the shore. So we've covered taking, making, and stealing time. Two more to go. The next is don't waste time. And by this, I don't mean be efficient with your time or exhibit good time management skills, although I do admire people who are efficient, and I'm oddly obsessed with Richard Posner. I read an article about him in The New Yorker several years ago, and he apparently sticks to a strict regime every day, which enables him to write 2 books a week. One thing that struck me is he's so efficient that he keeps his government ID card, which unlocks the door to the courthouse, in his back pocket. And he rubs his rear end against the detector in order to open the doors, which saves him the time of taking the card out of his wallet and putting it back in, thus enabling him to write an additional chapter each day. While I find this weirdly admirable, this is not what I mean by not wasting time. What I mean chiefly is don't waste time being afraid. I can't think of a larger obstacle to happiness than fear. We all face fear, large and small, every day. Get rid of it. Or, I should say, overcome it. I don't mean to dwell on my father's death, but when he died, I realized how stupid it is to be afraid. Afraid of meeting someone new, afraid of doing poorly at work, afraid of trying something new, afraid of being in a new situation, afraid of embarrassment, afraid of not fitting in. You should ask yourself, what exactly is there to be afraid of? And you ought to think, do you really want to spend your life in fear? Think about it. It's a recipe for a bitter old age. You're going to feel a lot of pressure to conform, whether in your workplace or in your neighborhood, in raising your kids, or in creating your relationships. Don't be afraid to do what you think is right. Don't be afraid to speak your mind. Don't be afraid to do what you think is fun, to do what you think might work, to do something that hasn't been tried before, to do something that might be a total flop. Don't be afraid, in other words, to stumble or even fail. Happiness is risk's reward. Boredom is fears. And time is a river. Last piece of advice, and you'll be all set. Cherish time. You need to embrace your life now, tomorrow, and the next day. You're living it. How's that for an insightful observation? I know it might seem that you've been preparing for your job as a lawyer while you've been here, but that's not entirely true. You've also been living your life. The 3 years you've spent here, John, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, like your tuition, are not refundable. I trust many of you chose UVA because you thought being miserable for 3 years was too high a price to pay for a good legal education. And my guess is you're happy you made that decision. I think you ought to continue to exercise this kind of judgment when you leave here. Some of you might think, well, I'm going to work for a law firm for a while, and then I'll move on to a job I really love, so the next few years are preparation for my real job when I'll start my real life. I want to caution you against thinking that way, because you're postponing your life. I sincerely hope that all of you will love your jobs. But even if you don't love your job, you can still love your life. How? Well, by making, taking, stealing, and not wasting time. And if you can't love your life because you don't love your job, well, that's when you have to overcome the fear about trying something new. You have a precious gift right now, and that is your relative youth. You've spent less from the small accounts that we each have. Don't take that for granted. Stop preparing and start living. Look for ways to bring joy to each and every day, much in the same way that all of you have brought joy to those of us fortunate enough to be your teachers. I can tell you that law professors at this law school, to a person, love their job, and a huge reason for that is all of you. In short, you ought to abide by the attitude of the narrator of the last poem I'll read. I first heard this poem on an unbearably sad occasion, the funeral of the young child whose father was a law school classmate and remains a dear friend. My friend's brother read the poem, and I can't tell you how often I think of it. To me, the urgency of this poem captures how one ought to approach life. And if you remember nothing else from this talk, I hope you remember at least some of this poem. It's called Summons, and it's by Robert Francis. Keep me from going to sleep too soon. Or if I go to sleep too soon, come wake me up. Come any hour of night. Come whistling up the road. Stomp on the porch. Bang on the door. Make me get out of bed and come and let you in and light a light. Tell me the northern lights are on and make me look. Or tell me clouds are doing something to the moon they never did before and show me. See that I see. Talk to me till I'm half as wide awake as you and start to dress, wondering why I ever went to bed at all. The poem goes on to say, tell me the walking is superb, but when read, my friend's brother said, whether inadvertently or on purpose, I don't know, tell me that waking is superb, which I thought was a perfect alteration and a perfect ending to the poem. So talk to me till I'm half as wide awake as you and start to dress, wondering why I ever went to bed at all. Tell me that waking is superb. So tell yourself, tell your friends, and have them remind you when necessary that waking is indeed superb. My time is up. I wish you all the best of luck, and thank you for the chance to talk to you.